Hello, and welcome to Merkwood Design's Adventures in Creativity. I'm your host, Ruth Ann Logsdon-Zaroff, and this is podcast number 5. This series also has an accompanying website with show notes, links, patterns, and projects. Just head over to merkwooddesigns.com. That's MIRKWOODESIGNS.com. The bumper music for today's podcast is All Things Bright and Beautiful, which is a 19th century hymn by Irish poet Cecil Frances Alexander. I've always loved this song, and the words, while so simple, are really profound. You might remember the British television series based on books by James Herriot about a country veterinarian. And each of the book titles in the series was a line from the first stanza of this poem. The television series itself was called All Creatures Great and Small. And you'll find the entire poem on my blog. Here in the United States, Thanksgiving is just around the corner, so the theme of today's podcast is giving thanks. First, some business, though. This is my 5th podcast, and I think I have my routine set now, but I'm wondering, do you like the format? Do I offer too many projects or tutorials? Too few? I asked this question on my blog recently, and I got a comment from one listener who really wishes that I recorded a podcast every week. Well, I would love to do that, but as it is, just planning and writing the projects for two podcasts a month is nearly a full-time job. I am just awed by those podcasters out there who have small children and or full-time jobs. I can't believe they produce such great podcasts every single week. You know, I think it's because they're a lot younger than I am. My intention for this podcast was to make it sort of a magazine format with different segments. So if you take a look at my blog, you'll see minute markers so you can skip around to whatever segment interests you, just like flipping through a magazine. I think that's fairly useful, especially if you want to go back and listen to just one segment again. So if you have a moment, vote in the poll on my website or make a comment on my blog or email me directly to let me know whether I have the right mix of things on my podcast and whether you like the format. I really want it to be useful and fun. Well, it is fun for me, but I also want it to be fun for you. Okay, let's see. What have I been making recently? I'm still working on learning to crochet a little bit better. I crocheted a mesh scarf with two Irish roses on each end. This is a pattern I figured out myself. The mesh stitch is incredibly easy. And when I finished it, it was really pretty, but it needed something else. So what I did was I gathered both of the ends and I added two Irish roses, which are these really pretty crocheted roses. They use a combination of you start with a round of chain stitch, then you add single crochets, then you add double and triple crochets, and you end up with these really beautiful little petals. It's just incredibly easy, but very effective. So anyway, I added these roses to either end of the scarf, and they added a lot of weight to the ends, which is really good because mesh scarves are very lightweight, very floaty kind of scarves because there's not a lot of yarn in them. It's very open. And the roses on either end add a little bit of weight, so you know you can fling it around your shoulder. I really like it. The yarns for both of the yarns I used for the mesh scarf are Berroco. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that right. It's B-E-R-R-O-C-O. Berroco Comfort Worsted Weight. And the scarf itself is a really pretty variegated yarn. I don't have the color. I threw the band away. Sorry about that. But obviously the roses are black. Why I ended up with black roses, I don't know. But it looks pretty. There's a photo of the scarf on my website and also a close-up of the roses so you can see what an Irish rose looks like. Okay, so now that I am a seasoned crocheter, yeah, right, I have grandiose plans to crochet a scarf and ear warmers for 9 different people on my Christmas list. Yikes! I think that's insane. It's like the year I decided to make lap quilts for everyone. I got 2 done, and I had to stop for the sake of my sanity. Anyway, my plan is to make the same pattern for each of the scarf and the ear warmers. It's the same one I used for Teddy's scarf. That way I'll be making something I know pretty well over and over. Because the yarn I used for Teddy's scarf is a little bit pricey, I think it was $11 a skein, and his scarf and ear warmers used 4 skeins of yarn, I'm going to search for something of a similar weight that's really soft and washable too, because Teddy's yarn is wool, which means it has to be hand washed. You can't just toss it in the washer and dryer. And I can imagine that most of the people on my list that I would like to make these for don't really want to have to care for a scarf that way. So I'm going to look for maybe a nylon, acrylic, something like that, that they can just toss in the washer and dryer. I've already found out what everybody's favorite color is, and now I think I need to make another trip to Knit Around in Ann Arbor. And will wonders never cease? I decided to make a real effort to learn to knit. Once I figured out why my stitches were so tight, things began to flow a little bit better. I got the hang of knitting and purling. I can do the rib stitch, and I can do the seed stitch, of course. And then I figured out how to do a cable stitch, which I'm so proud of myself because I've always been so impressed with I have several sweaters that have cable stitching down the front, and I thought, I would love to be able to learn to knit that way. So I figured out how to do the cable stitch, and I designed, and I have the word designed in quotation marks here. You can't see my quotation fingers. Anyway, I designed an ear warmer all by myself. Actually, I was just doing a practice swatch, and it got longer and longer, and the cable was looking so nice, I just kept going. So it ended up being an ear warmer, and I used the same yarn that I made Teddy's scarf and his crocheted ear warmer out of. So I think he'll get two ear warmers for Christmas. It'll be a matched set, so he'll have two ear warmers and a scarf. I think it's going to be an ear warmer Christmas for a lot of people this year. I mean, if nothing else, I'll get the ear warmers done, and then I'll give something else to the people in addition to them. There's a photo of my little knitted ear warmers on the website. You know, I really need to get back to a couple of quilts I've had on the back burner. One is a Baltimore album style quilt. I've got 18 of the 25 blocks complete. Each finished block measures 12 inches. While most of the blocks are from the Ellie Sienkiewicz books, she has published, 20-something books all about Baltimore album quilts and applique. Anyway, I designed some of the blocks myself. And sometime in a future podcast, I'm going to design an original block just for the podcast, and I'll offer that as a project. I'm hoping that'll get me back interested in my little it's a big Baltimore album quilt. This quilt will eventually belong to Teddy. The other quilt I've had on the back burner is my Dear Jane quilt. I've got 83 blocks, 13 triangles, and 2 corners completed, and I have a long way to go. What, you say? 83 blocks done and she's not close to being finished? Well, the Dear Jane quilt, in case you're not familiar with it, was a quilt that was made during the Civil War, and it has 169 blocks, 52-pieced triangles on the border, and 4-pieced corners. And the blocks themselves measure only 4.5 inches. I'm piecing both the Baltimore album quilt and the Dear Jane quilt entirely by hand. And I'll put links to both of my Baltimore album journey and my Dear Jane journey websites in the show notes so you can take a look at them. And I'll also include a link to the Dear Jane website itself. The Dear Jane online group I belong to has several subgroups, one of which is called the Basket Case Quilters. Several women got together to design original blocks of the month, all based on various basket designs. And these are all original basket designs, not ones that you'd find published in the store. And this is really fun because each block of the month uses different techniques. One month it might be applique, and next it might be paper piecing. Anyway, my fiber arts project for today's podcast was inspired by the November basket. I can't even talk today. The November basket case block. Try saying that 5 times fast. The next in my continuing series of free Alice in Wonderland red work blocks is the Mad Hatter. You can download the free pattern from my website. By the way, in this red work pattern, there are a couple of areas where the detail is really so small that I suggest you use only one thread rather than two in those areas, and they're noted in the pattern itself. There's a photo of the red work and a link to the project on my website. Getting back to the Mad Hatter, most folks believe that the name Mad Hatter was inspired by the phrase, as mad as a hatter. And why were hatters mad? Well, I'll tell you. Mercury was used in the process of curing felt that was used in a lot of hats back in the 19th century, and it was impossible for hatters to avoid inhaling the mercury fumes given off during the hat-making process. Hatters and mill workers often suffered mercury poisoning, as residual mercury vapor caused neurological damage, including confused speech and distorted vision. So it was not unusual then for hatters to appear disturbed or mentally confused. And many hat makers of that era died an early death as a result of mercury poisoning. I have an Alice in Wonderland website that I've had for about 10 years, and I get a lot of email questions, people asking different things about the books. And one question that's very common is they wonder what the label on the Mad Hatter's hat means. The label reads, in this style, 10/6. Well, 10/6 means 10 shillings and sixpence, the price of a hat, the hat in the old style of British money. Their monetary system changed to a decimalized system in the mid-20th century, by the way. Anyway, today that hat probably would cost something around $60. Stay tuned for the fiber arts segment. Today's topics are back basting applique and the old-fashioned technique of ruching, both techniques in this podcast's fiber arts project. And you'll learn to make a basic square pillow form and pillow. Welcome back. I'm Ruth Ann Logsdon Zaroff, and you're listening to Mirkwood Designs Adventures in Creativity. In today's fiber arts segment, I'm going to get back to quilting and talk about back basting applique and the old-fashioned technique of ruching, both of which are featured in this podcast's fiber arts project. And I'll also share with you an easy way to make a square pillow form and a pillow with the block you make. On the website, you'll see photos of the project, and there's also a link to the block project sheet, a link to a tutorial which gives you instructions on my style of back basting applique, and you'll also have a link to the ruching tutorial, which includes a 3D gathered leaf. And there is also a link to the pillow project, which includes instructions on how to make a pillow form yourself. Ruching is defined as decorative gathered fabric, and you'll see ruching in clothing as well as three-dimensional flowers in quilts. There are several ruching methods, but my tutorial provides the instructions for the easiest method I've found. You can use this technique on wider or narrower strips of fabric, on bias tape, or even on ribbon. Actually, if you use ribbon, I think it turns out incredibly pretty because a lot of the ribbon nowadays is variegated, so your flower will, if you're going to be making a flower with your ruched fabric, it will look very pretty with the variegated colors in the ribbon. The longer your piece of ribbon is, the larger your flower is. If you want to make a really large flower, cut a very long length of ribbon or narrow strip of fabric and just keep gathering and coiling it around to get the size that you want. It's better to start with a piece that's too long than one that's too short and find that your flower isn't going to be as large as you would like it. Experiment to discover what suits your project best. I love hand applique, and I've provided a tutorial for the method I use to applique large pieces to a block. It's called back basting applique, and it's done in two steps, but the results are worth the effort. Plus, once you baste the pieces down, you can put the block in a sewing box and take it with you to applique while you're in a waiting room or wherever you are. The method I use for appliquing smaller pieces, which is not covered in the tutorial, is called freezer paper on top. And I learned that from one of Ellie Sienkiewicz's Baltimore album books. I think what I'll do is in the project down the road when I offer my original Baltimore album style block, I will provide instructions for my freezer paper on top method. So if you look at the project sheet for this podcast's fiber arts project, oh, by the way, I call it the Merci Bouquet. That is my play on the words merci beaucoup, obviously. Basket of blessings, and I chose this because it is Thanksgiving, and we have a lot of blessings at this time of year that we're thankful for. So the block is called Merci Bouquet, Basket of Blessings. So you will be using a couple of different techniques. You will be using my back basting applique, and you'll also be doing gathered leaves and ruched flowers. So you'll be learning some new techniques if you haven't tried them before. It's quite a simple basket. If you find another way that you would like to do it rather than using, say, for example, the ruched flowers, feel free to applique a flower of your own design or even use yo-yos. These projects that I provide are really stepping off points for you to develop your own creative energy, your own creative spirit. I just give you my ideas of how I would do something and how I designed something, but please don't feel bound to follow the instructions that I provide. They just give you an idea of where to step off and do your own thing. The pillow top I came up with, it's one of those things where I woke up in the middle of the night and I was asking myself, what, I provide these quilt blocks and I've provided a couple of wall hangings now. And I thought, well, they're going to have their walls completely covered with things. And so I woke up in the middle of the night and I thought, a pillow. Now, chances are, if you're a seasoned quilter, when you practice your own blocks, you probably already have a lot of pillows around your house with quilt blocks that you've made as practice blocks. But give this a try anyway. But when I woke up the next morning, I realized that I didn't have a pillow form the right size. I didn't have a 12-inch pillow form, and I was lazy. I didn't feel like running out to the store just to get a pillow form. But I do have a mountain of bags of polyester fiberfill in my attic. I always buy them when they're on sale. I figure they'll come in handy for some reason down the road, making dolls or stuffed animals. Anyway, I realized that I could make my own pillow form. So I provide quick and easy instructions on how to make a pillow form in the project sheet. And basically you take two pieces of muslin, whatever size you want, and you sew the outside with a zigzag stitch on your machine. You can do it by hand too, of course, but I used my machine. It went really fast. I left about a 4-inch opening, and I didn't even turn it right side out because it doesn't have to be. This is the inside of the pillow that no one will ever see. So then I stuffed it full of polyester fiberfill, and I zigzagged the little closing, or the opening closed, and there I had a pillow form, the actual shape and size that I wanted. Now you can go ahead and make pillows of all different shapes and sizes. All you need is some sort of inexpensive fabric, like I use plain muslin. And it probably should be a plain fabric. Otherwise, if you make a light colored pillow top, you'll be able to see the, you know, if you used a pattern fabric underneath, you'd be able to see that inside. So I buy muslin by the bolt, by the way. Plain muslin. And you can make round pillows, diamond shaped pillows, oddly shaped pillows, just be creative. Also included in the tutorial sheets is how to make a simple square throw pillow with the pillow form that you've just made. Now, most of the pillows that I've made over the years, I've either put zippers in so that you can take the top off to wash, or I've just used a slip stitch to stitch it closed. And recently it dawned on me, there's a much easier way that requires no closure. You actually use two pieces of fabric on the back of your pillow, or your back of your block, and they overlap each other by about 4 inches or so. And so when it comes time to put the pillow form on the inside, you just slip it inside the opening in the back, sort of like an envelope kind of thing, and it folds over nicely, and you don't even need a button. It's a great way to make a washable pillow cover so that you can take it off easily and not have to worry about the fussiness of putting a zipper in or having to slip stitch and then undo slip stitches when you want to wash the pillow top. I hope you give that a try. Again, this is a great way to use up all those UFO quilt blocks that you've got laying around the house. It doesn't matter what size your quilt block is. Even if you want to make little tiny throw pillows of 4 inches, wouldn't that look cute on a doll bed? So I think maybe for you, this Christmas won't be an ear warmer Christmas, but maybe it's a UFO quilt pillow Christmas. Go to my blog, mirkwooddesigns.com, to download the free project sheets and tutorials. Stay tuned for the paper art segment. Today's topic is Soft Block Carving 201, and I'll show you how to create an elegant thank you card using the stamps that you've carved yourself. Stay tuned. Welcome back to Mirkwood Designs Adventures in Creativity. I'm Ruth Ann Logsdon Zaroff. In today's paper arts segment, we're continuing our stamp carving with Soft Block Carving 201, and I'll show you how to create an elegant thank you card using your new stamps. Remember, you can find complete instructions plus an additional resource sheet on the website mirkwooddesigns.com. Okay, so I hope that you gave Soft Block Carving 101 a try. That was the tutorial from last podcast. If you need to, you can always go back on the website and download that instruction sheet. If not, you really should try that before going ahead with this tutorial. It's important to get the feel of how the gouges work before you tackle a more complex image. Now, there are photos of each of the steps on my blog, so make sure you take a look at the blog and you'll see the various steps I'm going to talk about. For this project, you need to transfer the two images of the pair. One is the solid shadow, which I call the shadow pair, and the other is the outline, to your soft block. If you use thick enough soft block, you can transfer one to one side and one to the other side, so you don't waste block by just having one image on each block. I like to use as many sides of a block as possible to get the best use of them. The tutorial explains one way to quickly transfer the image, and the additional resource sheet provides several other ways. I'll talk about the way I prefer in a moment. So once you transfer the image of the shadow pair to one side of your soft block, begin carving away the background. I find that using the large gouge first works best, then I use the small gouge to refine the image. With the shadow image, because it's such a blocky large image, you might not even need to use the small gouge for the shadow image. Periodically, test your image by inking and stamping on a piece of scrap paper. And remember, you don't have to carve deeply. I think that's one of the things that a lot of novice carvers do at first. They think that they really need to carve deep into the block, but think of what a rubber stamp looks like. The depth of the rubber stamp is pretty shallow. Just a small depression in the block. You have to just have it shallow enough that when you ink it with your ink pad, the ink doesn't touch the depression in the stamp. And remember, until you improve, carve only small amounts away as you're carving. You can easily carve away more, but you can't add more block if you've carved away too much. And don't be too hard on yourself if your first carvings are not perfect. This is a new skill, and just like any new skill, it takes practice. Now, after you've finished with the shadow pair, turn the block over, and then you're going to transfer the image of the outline pair and begin carving that. Now, this is a little trickier because you want to maintain a fairly thin outline of the pair. And again, until you gain confidence, be conservative with your carving. Remember, ink and stamp periodically to test your carving. And when you're pleased with the outline of your pair, try the two images together. First, stamp your shadow pair with a light colored ink, and then use a dark ink and stamp the outline pair on top of the shadow. Now, you don't need to be precise. As a matter of fact, I prefer to stamp the outline slightly off register. I think it's really pretty and more artistic that way. Experiment with different color combinations until you find what's pleasing to you. In my experience, the ink you use for the outline should always be darker than the shadow. Otherwise, you won't be able to really see the outline on top of the dark inked shadow. I've included a project sheet so you can use your new stamps to make a note card. I've referred to it as a thank you card, but honestly, that's just because I wanted to make it relevant to my Thanksgiving-themed podcast. You can use the blank note card, obviously, for anything. Although I admit, I already sent my note card as a thank you note. In addition to the tutorial and project sheets, I've also provided an in-depth carving instruction sheet that has loads of information. It has information about where to buy supplies and tools, sources for images, different ways to transfer images, and it also has a bonus page of great images to carve, especially for the beginning carver. There are several of the shadow and outline images, and then there's a couple of others. I really like butterflies, so I included a butterfly for you to try. Now, I mentioned I was going to talk about my favorite way to transfer images to soft block. I prefer to use the technique acetone transfer. The instructions are in the resource sheet that I provided. This requires that the image be printed on a laser printer or from a toner-based copier. Now, unfortunately, over the past 10 years, I've noticed that toner formulas must have changed because the toner from my new Brother laser printer does not work with this technique. I'm really disappointed because, frankly, that's actually why I bought the laser printer. Anyway, if your library or your office has a copier, particularly an older model, do a test. What you want to do is print the tutorial sheet, Soft Block Carving 201. Print that on a piece of paper, run it through the copier at your office or at your library where they might have an older copier, and then follow the acetone transfer instructions that are on the resource sheet. You'll need acetone, which is just fingernail polish remover. You want to make sure that it is acetone based because there are some polish removers that actually say on the outside does not contain acetone. Anyway, what you do is you lay the image toner down on top of your block, and you saturate a cotton ball or a wad of tissue with the acetone or the fingernail polish remover that has acetone in it. And then you saturate the back of that piece of paper. And when it's completely saturated with the acetone, very carefully lift up a corner of the paper. And if the toner has transferred to your block, then you know that that's the right kind of toner from the copier or from your laser printer. If it has not transferred, try saturating again and maybe rub with your finger a little bit, excuse me, over the area where the toner is on the other side. Lift it up again. If it has not transferred, I'm afraid that that toner, that method is simply not going to work. Try it on various printers and copiers. Again, this has to be done using either a laser printer or a copier that is toner-based, and it has to have a particular type of toner that will transfer with acetone. I don't know why the formulas changed over the years, and I'm really disappointed because this is, in my opinion, the most effective way to transfer an image to soft block. Now, there are a number of ways to transfer the image to your block. Of course, you could just draw on your block yourself. But if you have an image you'd like to transfer, the resource sheet provides a lot of information and an explanation of how you do each of the transfer methods. Except for the acetone transfer method, you probably have everything else to do the other transfers right in your own home. I really hope you give soft block carving a try. If you want to see samples of what you can accomplish with a little practice, and I really mean a little practice, not much, please visit my carving gallery. I'll put a link on my blog. The URL for my carving site is ruthannzaroff.com/carving. That's ruthannzaroff.com/carving. When you get there, just click on the gallery link along the left side of the page. Again, you'll find complete instructions for soft block carving tutorials, the in-depth resource sheet, and the thank you card project on my site, mirkwooddesigns.com. Up next, the recipe segment. Today we're making roasted sweet potatoes with spiced sugar and whipped butter. I'll be right back. Welcome back to Mirkwood Designs, Adventures in Creativity. I'm Ruth Ann Logsdon Zaroff, and this is the recipe segment. Today, I'm offering my recipe for roasted sweet potatoes with spiced sugar and whipped butter. Most people I know use the term yam interchangeably with sweet potato, but did you know that yams are completely different from sweet potatoes? Here in the United States, we pretty much see only sweet potatoes in our grocery stores, even though the sign above the produce may say yam. They're actually sweet potatoes. Some markets are beginning to carry actual yams, but they're not common. Incidentally, real yams can grow to over 7 feet in length. How did the mistake begin? Well, long ago, when slaves first saw the sweet potato in this country, they thought it looked like their familiar African tuber, nyame, and the name stuck, eventually becoming the word yam. The sweet potato is very distinct from the other plant known as yam, which is native to Africa and Asia, and which is not even distantly related to the sweet potato. To prevent confusion, the United States Department of Agriculture requires that the sweet potatoes labeled as yams also be labeled as sweet potatoes. So the next time you buy a can of candied yams at the grocery store, you should also see the words sweet potatoes somewhere on the label, at least here in the States. You can see photos on my website showing the difference between sweet potatoes and yams. When I was young, I was not particularly fond of sweet potatoes. Really, the only time we had them was on Thanksgiving, and they were always in a casserole that was overly sweet with marshmallows, and they were very mushy. And maybe you like that, but I really don't. Then when I began dating my husband, his dad used to serve baked sweet potatoes that you could just pick up with your hands and eat, not even with anything on them. At first, I thought that was really weird. I mean, eating the skin and everything. But over the years, I grew to love them. As an aside, his dad is actually the reason I eat green beans now. The first time I was invited for a family dinner, his dad made green beans, and at the Zaroff house, you didn't serve yourself. Pops just put food right on your plate. So there I was, the new girlfriend, wanting to make a good impression, and Pops put a pile of green beans on my plate. I didn't want to make anyone mad or anything, so I ate them. And I've eaten them ever since. Thanks, Pops. So, back to sweet potatoes. Over the years, I've eaten and made sweet potatoes in many ways, from grilling to mashing to casseroling. Is that a word? I developed today's recipe specifically for this podcast, in part to honor my fantastic father-in-law, Pops, who is, by the way, the original Ted Zaroff. Remember, both my husband and son are also named Ted. I wanted to add a Ruth Ann twist, so I thought of adding whipped butter topped with something spicy sweet. Now, you can do as Pops does and just eat the roasted sweet potato, or you can add just the whipped butter. Or, even better, you can add the works with my spiced sugar topping. Whatever you do, make sure to eat the skin too, because it's full of fiber, which is essential to your daily nutrition. And sweet potatoes are chock full of beta carotene. There's a photo of the dish on my website and a link to the recipe. My recipe makes 4 servings, but you can easily bake fewer or more sweet potatoes to suit your needs. And since they're so large, 1 sweet potato will easily serve 2 people as a side dish. You'll notice that my photo series for the recipe shows only 2 sweet potatoes. Well, with Teddy away at college, that leaves only the 2 of us, and that's the beauty of this recipe. You can make just what you need. Rubbing the washed sweet potatoes with oil and salting them lightly will make that skin really yummy and crisp, and the inside will be all soft and squishy after roasting. The natural sugars inside caramelize quite a bit, so you might not want to add too much of the spiced sugar topping. Give it a taste test first, and then decide what suits your individual taste. You can make your individual portion as savory or as sweet as you like, and not be bound by a super sweet casserole. And if you don't have nutmeg in your spice cabinet, just skip it. I really like nutmeg, and I add it to a lot of recipes. I buy whole nutmeg and grate it on a microplane, which actually, as an aside, microplanes actually were invented to be woodworking tools to do kind of fine shaving of wood. And then, just like is true of a lot of stuff you find in the kitchen, cooks discovered it, and now microplanes are sold in kitchenware stores. Anyway, I grate my nutmeg on a microplane, and to me there's a big difference between that and pre-grated nutmeg. My husband is always my guinea pig for my original recipes, and so far this is his absolute favorite. He said he won't let me make sweet potatoes any other way, ever again. Oh, and if you don't finish them, they last in the fridge for a couple of days. Just reheat them in the microwave. Now, I haven't tried freezing these yet because they haven't lasted long enough to have to be frozen, but I think that if you wrap your baked or roasted sweet potato tightly in foil and then freeze them, and then when you want to eat them, let them come to room temperature, take them out of the foil and reheat them in the microwave, or you could even put them in a regular oven to reheat them through, I think that nothing would suffer. I don't think the texture would suffer at all. So you might want to give that a try if you make too many and don't eat them all at once. I hope you give my sweet potato recipe a try, maybe even at this year's Thanksgiving feast. If you do, won't you please let me know how you liked it? You'll find the recipe, along with all of the show notes, on my website, mirkwooddesigns.com. Next is the grab bag. This time around, I'm going to share a little bit of family lore and give thanks. Stay tuned. Welcome back to Mirkwood Designs Adventures in Creativity. I'm Ruth Ann Logsdon Zaroff, and this is The Grab Bag. 15 years ago, I embarked on a mission to publish a family cookbook. I spent months collecting recipes from my mother and my siblings, and the book was published in July of 1995, just in time for my sister Karen and her husband Denny's 25th wedding anniversary. The cookbook contained not only family recipes, but also family stories. One of them is about my first Thanksgiving dinner as a new bride. It's called Turkey Surprise. Once upon a time, a new bride decided to try her hand at making a complete Thanksgiving dinner, everything from turkey and dressing to pumpkin pie. She wanted to prove to her new husband that she was a great catch indeed. She diligently wrote down all of her Donna Reed-like mom's recipes and gathered everything she needed to make the perfect Thanksgiving dinner. Everything went like clockwork when the big day came. Pies were baked, the turkey was thawed, but when it came to making the secret family recipe dressing, no giblets were to be found. In a tizzy, the new bride ran to the corner grocer and begged the butcher for giblets. "Please, sir, have you a spare heart and gizzard?" Armed with the turkey innards, she finished preparing the dinner with barely a moment to spare. The new bride beamed as she watched the new husband proficiently carve the turkey. But what was this? There inside the neck cavity of the turkey, in a tidy paper sack, were the missing giblets, now all nicely cooked. Later, when the new bride began to tell her Donna Reed-like mom about the dinner, her mom interrupted, saying, "Did I ever tell you about the time your cousin cooked her first turkey? It was so funny. Imagine not knowing where the giblets were inside the turkey." The new bride just laughed. Since the theme of this podcast is giving thanks, I have some thanks of my own to give. First and foremost, I am thankful to God for my life. God doesn't always give me what I want, but He always gives me what I need. And I need to remember, everything happens in God's time, not mine. I'm thankful for the gifts that God has given me, particularly the gift of creativity. Next, I'm thankful for my wonderful family, especially my husband Ted and my son Teddy. Everything I do for you guys. And for my siblings and my in-laws, you're the best. And for my friends and acquaintances, thanks for your inspiration and your support. Finally, thanks to you, my listeners. I truly appreciate each and every one of you. I wish you and yours a most blessed Thanksgiving. Thank you for listening today, and I hope you continue to listen. Please email me or post comments on iTunes or on my blog to let me know what is on your mind. My email address is ruthann@mirkwooddesigns.com. Ruthann is spelled R-U-T-H-A-N-N. I hope to hear from you. You can find links to my podcasts, show notes, projects, and much more on my website, mirkwooddesigns.com. That's M-I-R-K-W-O-O-D, designs.com. By the way, if you've missed a project, tutorial, or recipe, you can always go to my blog, and along the right column, there are links to both my projects page and my recipe page. Click on those to go directly to all of my projects, tutorials, and recipes without having to sift through all of my blogs. Until next time, this is Ruth Ann Logsdon-Zaroff with Mirkwood Designs, Adventures in Creativity. And remember, creativity isn't a race, it's an adventure.